We would like to thank Karen and Jacob Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Lox and Learn. Iloy Nishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba, Leah Bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov. Their neshama should have an aliyah.
Amen.
Thank you all for braving the cold weather.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. It's not so bad in here, right? We're good? For the first time. Okay, so our goal today is to start a new Mishnah. Perhaps finish it, perhaps not. We'll see how far we get. And as we do this Mishnah, we're going to be reminding ourselves of a previous Mishnah that we did, reviewing that to some extent in order to try to better understand this Mishnah. So in the progression of where we are in the Mishnayos, so again, by now it should all be in our head already. We started with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, his statement, a list of his five students, a praise of his five students, and then his five students answering the question as to what is the straight path that a person should cling to, and then his five students answering what is the bad path that we should stay far away from. And then we started with the statements of the students themselves. Last week we did for Rabbi Eliezer. This week we're going to start Rabbi Yehoshua. So let's jump straight into source number one, Pirkei Avos. Parak 2, Mishnah 11, Rabbi Yeshua Omer. Rabbi Yeshua says, Ayin Hara, V'yetzer Hara, V'sinas Habrios, Motzien Esa'adam Mina Olam. So if you remember, we already mentioned that we're going to be talking in threes, that each student is going to say three things. The three things Rabbi Yeshua says have some commonality in that they all are things that remove us from the world. The question is, what world are we talking about? So we'll have to think about that. How do these things remove us from the world? Is this a metaphor, or is it something to be taken literally? And then, probably most importantly, what are these three things? So, Ayin Hara. Anybody's memory, working on them a little bit. Have we seen this relatively recently? Right, so this is one of the five things that we are told to stay away from. Does anybody remember who said it? It was the first statement. It was Rabbi Eliezer. So the person who we spoke about last week, when asked what are one of the five things we should stay away from, doesn't say this exact statement. It doesn't say Ayin Hara. Anybody remember what he says? Ayin Ra'a. So slight grammatical nuance that might be important. Is there a difference between Ayin Hara and Ayin Ra'a? Okay, so we'll see that momentarily. So that's number one, Ayin Hara. We'll have to understand what that means. Number two, Yetzer Hara. Term we're probably familiar with. How to define it, what exactly it means, is a little bit more complicated. I'm not sure we're going to do a comprehensive examination of that today, but we'll touch on some important notes. And then finally, Sinas Habrios, hating creations. People? Animals? What are we talking about here? And what type of hatred? Alright, so we have a bunch of things we're going to have to examine, and throughout this whole thing we're trying to understand why are these things bad, but how do they remove us from the world? So now just to remind us of the mission that we saw previously, look in source number 2. So Amar Lam Tsuru'u Ezu Derech Yishar Shiyad Bakba Adam. So we just referred to this. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tells the students what is the path that we should stick to. Rabbi Eliezer says Ayin Tov. Rabbi Yeshua says Chaver Tov. And then what is the path that we should stay away from? Rabbi Eliezer says Ayin Ra'a. And Rabbi Yeshua says Chaver Ra'a. So we're going to look perhaps as to connecting Rabbi Yeshua's statement here, what that has to do with his statement from before of Chaver Tov, so how do all these things relate to being a good friend? But also, perhaps more importantly for the present, is comparing and contrasting what is Yetzer Hara and Ayin Ra'a. So everybody see those are two different words?
Yes.
Yetzer Hara and Ayin Ra'a. So what are the difference between those two things? We're going to skip source number 3 for now. In terms of analyzing, but just to see that later on in Parak 4, Mishnah 21, which we'll get to in a bunch of years from now, we have a similar formulation of these three things, Kina, Taiva, and Kavod, jealousy, cupidity, and honor are motzien ha'adam es adam in olam. So that same formulation of motzien es adam in olam, they remove us, remove people from the world, is used in a later Mishnah, and some commentators are going to relate those two. I don't think we're going to dwell on that for today, but just so you know it, keep it in the back of your mind, maybe it'll come up later. So now, the first thing we're going to do for today is compare and contrast commentaries from the previous Mishnah, so Mishnah 9, to our Mishnah, I wrote it here as Mishnah 11, actually we'll see the commentators say it's Mishnah 10. We've mentioned in the past that the numbers of the Mishnayos are slightly different in different commentators. So some label this one as 10, and some label it as 11, some label it as 12, etc. So don't get confused by that too much. So we're going to be comparing what what the commentators said about Ayin Ra'ah in Mishnah Ches, and what the commentators say about Ayin Hara in Mishnah 10. Let's just call it for now. So, does anybody remember, if you didn't cheat yet and look inside the sources, what we said generally about, in Mishnah 8, what Ayin Ra'ah was? It's a really long time ago.
Laser's not here.
Laser's are our Bor Sud, Shainam Abetipo. Okay, so let's remind ourselves, that's the reason why I gave it to us. So if you look in source number 4, first we're going to quote the Rambam from Mishnah Ches, and then the Rambam from Mishnah Yud. So the Rambam from Mishnah Ches, when it comes to Ayin Tova, so the good eye, and he's going to contrast it to the bad eye, says, what does it mean to have a good eye, and in contrast, a bad eye? Ha-histapkut v'meh sheyesh la'adam. It is to be satisfied with what you have. V'himi ma'alot ha'midot. It is a character trait. V'ayin ra'ah is hafcha. Is the opposite. So it is not being satisfied with what you have. Ritzoni lomar lachshov es harav lema'at. When you have a lot, to think it's actually a little. Ule hishtadel betosefes, and to always want more, 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 more. So you're never satisfied with what you have. So the Rambam understands in Mishnah Ches that Ayin Ra means to have a bad eye in the sense of never being satisfied, always wanting more than what you have. So what does he say here in Mishnah Yud? So this is underneath, I put little dots in between to contrast them. So this is Mishnah Yud, same source number 4. Yomar chemdas hamamon v'rov hataiva v'roa hanefesh. So this is important. So notice how what the Rambam does is he gives you basically a two-word explanation for each thing in the Mishnah. So corollary to Ayin Hara is chemdas hamamon. So Ayin Hara, the Rambam says, means a desire of money. That's a pretty similar explanation, right? In Ayin Ra'ah, he says it's not being satisfied with what you have, always wanting more. In Ayin Hara, he says it's desiring money. It's a pretty similar explanation. There's not really that big of a difference in the Rambam. Now, what about Yetzer Hara? This is not directly what we're focusing on now, but keep this in mind also. Yetzer Hara, he translates as, or explains as, Rov HaTa'ava, which is lots of desires. What type of desires? He does not elaborate. Again, perhaps we'll talk about that a little bit later. And now also, I want to just keep this in the back of your mind for later. How does he understand sinas habrios, not liking or hating people or creatures? Roa HaNefesh, being a bad soul. What does that mean? So he explains that for us. That's a little bit cryptic. Behu choli mara shechora. This is a sickness. Anybody know what mara shechora is? Melancholy. So depressive tendencies. Hameviyas hada'am lema'os re'iyas b'nei mino ulison'am. Which brings people to dislike and eventually to hate other people. V'ta'arev lo habedidut, and as a consequence, what is this person going to want? Isolation. V'hahimtza'ut v'midbariot u'bibatot u'bidrachim hashomimot, and because he wants isolation, where is he going to end up?
Desert.
Some desert, some dangerous place. Hare elu ya'adu as adam b'lo safek. So that's going to destroy you. Now, the Rambam, we're going to have to understand this a little bit later in terms of how do we understand, you know, depression nowadays is not necessarily the same thing. When we say the word depression, isn't necessarily the same thing the Rambam saying when he says Mara Shechor. So we're going to have to analyze that a little bit.
What percent of people suffer from this sickness?
What percent of people suffer from
for this disease? He elaborates so much about it.
How many people?
No,
I don't know.
In those days,
how many people? That
it's like there's a lot of
enough that it was important to him. You know, it's not a new. Again, when I'm using the word depression, it's not the same. The Rambam's not following, you know, the DSM diagnostic criteria for how we define depression. But the, what the there is
that most people that, probably do have potential to have this, and that's why it's depressing.
It's a problem. I mean, that this isn't you know, people to be to have what he's describing is not a new thing that happened in the 20th century that all of a sudden people are starting to be depressed. Again, not the same word, but. It's the last time I'm going to contrast those two things. But we'll get to that a little bit later. For now, just keep that in mind, how the Rambam understands each one of those things. But our big point, for immediate point, is that the Rambam seems to understand Ayin Hara and Ayin Ra as similar. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah, who we're about to see, does not. Look at Rabbeinu Yonah, source number 5. V'zehu sha'amar Rabbi Lezer Ayin Tova. This is in the first, in the 8th Mishnah. So this is a previous Mishnah that we did. What does Ayin Tova mean? Rotze lomar, midas hanedibus, to be magnanimous, to want to give. That's the good eye. She mida na'a mushubatas, v'acharios betachlios hanedibus, akopanim yasi gamalas acheres. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that if you have this magnanimity, you will end up having other good traits as well. Kimach masrocha v'libo ve'enu ayapa v'ayla b'amida azos. And through having a good heart and wanting to give, you're going to be able to have other character traits as well. In contrast, so what would be Ayin Har, Ayin Ra'ah? What would be Ayin Ra'ah? To not want to give. Right? To be stingy. So now, Rabbeinu Yonah is going to say that that is not the same thing we're talking about in this Mishnah. And he's going to make a grammatical point. And this is going to lead actually to a very fascinating discussion, which we started last time, in terms of when we use the word Ayin Hara, what do we mean when we say Ayin Hara? What? Evil eye. Right? And we spent time talking about the evil eye. Since that shiur, which wasn't that long ago, I have some new information that I think is going to be interesting to us. Based on these Mishnayos, and based on something that Rabbi Dr. Nassim Slifkin just published, I saw it, this was a good timing, on Thursday, so he runs a biblical museum of the zoo, I forgot exactly what it's called, the Zoo Biblical Museum in Israel that he runs, and he was fundraising for it, so he recently, he's in the middle of a book, and he recently wrote a manuscript on this topic of evil eye. I'll show you, I'll quote to you a little bit in more detail a little bit later. And he said that he's trying to fundraise before the end of the year. So he said, if you send me a donation for the Biblical Museum, I will send you this this manuscript before it's published on Evil Eye. I'm thinking to myself, it's Thursday, I'm talking about this on Shabbos. It wasn't Thursday, I saw it Friday morning. He published it on Thursday, I saw it Friday morning, and he's in Israel. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to donate. You know, I donated, and then I said, please send me the thing. He sent it, and luckily I was able to read it. So we have some new, hot off the press information that's going to help us understand this Mishnah a little bit better. So now, he actually quotes this Rabbeinu Yonah. We were going to quote it anyway because it's on our Mishnah. But look, he quotes this Rabbeinu Yonah. His main point is, when you think about evil eye, and we spoke about this, the Rambam sort of cuts it out, doesn't talk about it. We tend to think of, you know, the more rationalist thinkers are not going to talk about this harm or damage that you can do. It sounds like the supernatural, mystical idea that I can do damage by looking at something. So they're going to we would assume that the rational interpreters are going to reinterpret what Ayin Hara means to mean something more psychological, not something mystical. And what he argues is that you find that that's not true for a reason we're about to see. And that besides the Rambam, all other medieval rationalist thinkers believed in the Ayin Hara for the following reason, and Rabbeinu Yonah quotes it. So look in source number 5, this is part 2, where it says number 10.
Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ayin Hara, Perish, Misha Eno Sameach Bechalko, Ve'uyan Es Chaver. So he starts off by saying, similar to the Rambam, that it means that I'm not happy with what I have. But he doesn't stop there. I see my rich friend, and I think, when am I going to become rich like that person? And it causes bad harm to himself, and to his friend. Up until now, nothing crazy has been said from our conception. It just says that sounds like it's a bad thing. It'll cause me harm, it'll cause my friend harm. Okay, we could interpret that as like a metaphor for harm. But here's the kicker. Ka'asher amru chachmei hateva, as the scientists, if you will, of the day, argued, mikol asher l're'ehu avir olam min hamachshava, there is a sense of spirit, some sort of an aura that comes from thoughts, from these bad thoughts, ahu, these jealous thoughts. Visoreif es hadvarim she'uyan bahem be'einav hara'a, and they can burn things through this evil eye. Gam bekirbo yisraf achar shemisabel dvarim, even internally, this sense, this aura, this, and we'll see how to put English terms to it in a second, can destroy you internally. Shein yecholas matzui biadol asosim achshava hi mekalkelos gufo. It's actually going to eat you up inside and destroy you. There's some sort of scientific thing going on here. Again, in our mind, it's not. But in the medieval times, there's some sort of scientific idea here that bad thoughts and bad stares can actually create some sort of aura that can do damage. Vizehu ayin hara. And that's what ayin hara is, Shamar B'Yeshua. That's what B'Yeshua is talking about. Now, we're going to talk about the scientific point in a second, but in terms of the textual point, why is he making this difference between Ayin Ra'ah, where he said it's a character trait, Ayin Ra'ah, in the first Mishnah, he said it's talking about my ability to, you know, be not nice, be stingy, and over here he's talking about some sort of metaphysical, scientific burning of the eyes, right? So why is he switching his... Just in terms of the Mishnah, why is he switching it? So he said, I'll tell you why I'm switching it. Rerayel is that perish al sha'amar bekan ayin hara. Here it says ayin hara. The lashon zachar. It's in the male formulation. Ayin hara. Shezehu ha'uyan bera. It's something that I'm looking at. I'm causing bad. A destructive character, etc. So he's saying that it's, you have to look at the grammar. The grammar here sounds like it's, I'm causing something to be happen. There it sounds like it's a trait. It's a midah. Midah is nekeva. So that's why it's ayin ra'ah over there and ayin hara over here. Right.
It's your own, the way you see, you know, like when you said that you're not happy with what you have. It's your eye.
In other words, it's an adjective for your eye, ra'ah. Right. But hara is like the hefir, the positive, sort of. I hear you. Grammar gets me mixed up. But for the main point, he's saying that there's a grammatical reason why he's making this switch. Now, look at the Abarbanel. So the Abarbanel, source number six, again, Abarbanel is sort of like, is this, you know, we think somebody who's worldly, he's connected, we don't think about him as a mystic necessarily. And here, we saw this in source number six. We actually read this in Barbanel when we did the Mishnah beforehand a few months ago, where he says, we're not going to read this inside now, but here he says that when it comes to ayin, similar to the Rabbeinu Yonah, when it comes to ayin ra'ah of the previous Mishnah, I'm not going to interpret that as the ayin hara that we generally refer to as causing damage with eyes because of context of the Mishnah. It sounds like it's a trait, doesn't sound like it's something that is causing damage. Now, flip the page. to page number two. Here's the Abarbanel. I don't think we're going to read this inside entirely, but I want to pick out a little bit. So this is the Abarbanel on our Mishnah. And Nelson Silfen doesn't quote this, but he quotes the Abarbanel on Chumash. And the Abarbanel here is actually going to refer to what he says on Chumash when it comes to Parshas Kisisa as to the damage that can be done by counting the Jews. Rashi explains that comes from Ayin Hara, and he explains here as well that that has to do with Ayin Hara. And just for the point that I want to make is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So look at the fifth line, fourth word on the line. So who's he going to quote about Ayin Hara? Who's he going to be as proof text that Ayin Hara is a thing? It's V'kvar Kiblu HaPhilosophim. So Rabbeinu Yonah quotes the Chachmei HaTeva, the scientist, and Abarbanel is quoting the philosophers of the day, who all warned us about the Inyan Ayin Hara. V'kvar Abu Hamad B'Sof Mamaro. So he's quoting, and I'm not holding it all this stuff, but it sounds like, and he's going to refer to it later, this is an Arabic, a Muslim philosopher, Abu Hamad, B'Sof Mamaro B'Tibios Sha'nefesh Ha'inushios Tif'al B'Tziura B'Chomer Ha'olam V'Kasher Tagia B'Tziura Sakas B'Tziura Dabar Hamachis Yishames Mezeg Haguf Yishamei Mezeg Haguf B'Yisadmu Ha'panim. So he's saying there's some internal physiological thing that's going on, which this we would agree with, when you get anger, when you get these negative emotions. V'chein v'yegia, we're now, if you're lost, we're up to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the beginning of the eighth line in the Abarbanel on page 2. V'chein v'yegia b'nefet shura sakino sina atzuma b'tzirav machshavta yishtane meze gufa o yizchadshu ba idim ra'im arsa'im. It creates this poisonous something or other that emanates from your body. Umafat tzira nefesh u'machshava yifsad ruach ha'aviri u'vosot tzira yatsu idim migufa. Again, there's something going to emanate, something poisonous is going to emanate from your body. Shi'argu b'nei adam, and it can kill people. Gama b'alei chayim. V'ahefzer hazeh yikru b'nei adam ayin hara ken yafsu. This is mind-boggling, right? But this is the Abarbanel. Look in source number 7. Here's what Rabbi Dr. Slifkin says. Right, so again, there are physiological things that we agree with here, but it's the part that goes a little bit above and beyond that is that there are these poisonous things that are coming that can do damage. So look at Rabbi Dr. Nassim Slifkin. This is from, again, this new publication. I encourage you all to make your donation, and you can read this on your own. Just a small excerpt. It says, from ancient times, the idea that animals and people can affect their surroundings with their eyes was considered perfectly normal and even to have a scientific basis. Whereas modern science reveals that the eye only absorbs radiation, in antiquity the eye was thought to emit radiation, a kind of fire. Plato wrote about how this fire emerges from the eyes and combines with daylight to form a homogeneous entity through which images are conducted back into the eye. When coupled with harmful intent on behalf of the viewer, this radiation was thought to become especially dangerous. In the second century of the Common Era, Galen adopted this theory of vision known as extramission and further developed it. His view was enormously influential. This is fascinating. This is fascinating. And again, I'm not going to give away his whole take on this. I do encourage you to read it when you can. But the point here and the point that he makes, and because he has a few things that he's very interested in. One is animals. One is rationalist versus mysticism, right? And sort of science of Chazal, and all of this, and mystical creatures. All of these things come together in this article because there's a whole bunch of things that are going on. Here you have science. Here you have science of Chazal, science of the times back then. You have also what's interesting is the mysticism versus rationalism, what you would expect is sort of flipped, because you would think that the rationalists wouldn't agree with this concept of Ayin Hara, but here, because it's scientifically based, they do. So that's another thing that interests him. The third thing that interests him is that the concept of like a basilisk. So, the Harry Potter fans here, the Chamber of Secrets. So they believed in mystical, a lot of people believed in these mystical creatures, and that's what the Abhavana was quoting, is that there are animals that can actually do damage with eyes, right? That's what it's referring to, right? The Nachash could do... He did damage with his eyes? Right. So we'll get to Tov Ra in a little bit, but yeah. And then the fourth thing that's interesting is that what they used to do to fight the Ayin Hara is post these they used to, in shuls, and he found shuls. They put ostrich eggs in the shul, and they're like, instead of a chandelier with this stuff, they had a chandelier with ostrich eggs. And the reason is because an ostrich is, the thought was that the way they fertilized their eggs was by staring at them. And it's a reminder in shuls of the power of concentration. That if you can, you should concentrate during davening, like the ostrich concentrates on the egg in order to fertilize it. And you have all of these things. He found a bunch of shuls that have these ostrich eggs all over the shul. So it's pretty fascinating, and it's a pretty interesting back culture as to where all this came from. And what he deals with is then, how do you deal with this in modern times? So how do the modern commentators sort of re-understand this? Do they take this just as the same it was back then, which you'll find people who do that? Or how do you reinterpret this, if you can, in terms of a modern sensibility? So he deals with that in the end of the essay. Again, I encourage everybody to read that, but that would be a whole separate thing. For our Mishnah's purposes, what we see for now is that the commentators are dealing with this exact issue. How do you understand what Yetzer Hara versus... Ayin Hara versus what Ayin Ra is, all circles around our commentators here of how they understood what Ayin Hara. Notice the Rambam doesn't say any of this. You have to understand why. It has to do also with the Rambam science. Apparently Aristotle differed with Plato on this and took a whole different view of how the eye works. But they didn't know how the eye works. They didn't know. This is how they thought that we see. Right? It's through emitting things. Again, fascinating stuff. We're going to end this section for a second and go to the second section, which is going to talk about Yetzer Hara. And I'm going to take a second to drink.
No, but we have this metaphorically, as you said, a person can eat himself up.
Right. So the metaphors are there, and you can understand this in psychological terms. If you remember from the time we did this the first time, we quoted Rav Soloveitchik, who understands this in psychological terms. The whole concept of Ayin Hara, he understands in psychological terms. You can't say that with all the commentators. Right? You can't deny the fact that here are commentators, based on the science of their day, that understood it this way. What exactly the idea was originally, again, yes, you have to understand how they understood it back, you know, in Chazal. And they have to understand it during the medieval times. You have to understand during biblical times, how do they understand this? You don't have this concept explicitly in the Torah at all. The concept of Ayin Hara like this does not exist in the Torah. It's understood from later generations. They try to reinsert it into the Torah, like in Parshas Kisisa, but there's no explicit concept of Ayin Hara in the Torah itself.
So where did the idea of the red foot come from, for example?
So that's all based on these later things. And the truth is this is the red string actually... bases itself. Now, notice this isn't a Jewish concept, right? It doesn't mean it's not a Jewish concept, but it's not an exclusively Jewish concept. And you find the red bendels in other cultures as well. And in fact, you have lots of commentators who say that the red bendel is Avodah Zarah and that you shouldn't wear. So again, that's beyond what we're going to talk about now. It's a fascinating topic. I do refer you to his article. I refer you to, you know, what we spoke about the previous time. And I do refer you to this other shiurim on yutorah.org that deal with this concept of Ayin Hara on its own. I don't want to go too far afield with this specific, you know, broader Ayin Hara topic. Okay? Can we hold it?
No, I just want to say...
Yeah.
No.
What? Yeah, so again, there's research on exactly where it started. But again, it's cross-cultural, the concept of Ayin Hara and the concept of what do you do in order to fight the Ayin Hara. Right? And there are people, even nowadays, who do these, not just the red bandana, they do like some pretty... Right. All sort of like... In Yerushalayim, there's all these things that you can do to save yourself from the Ayin Hara. It's a little bit, again, for us, it's a little bit strange, it's a little bit weird, but it exists. Okay, so now...
How about you do Shiura?
On that topic is explicitly?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe.
Can you do it
Yeah. Okay. So now I have a feeling that the second part is going to be a similar conclusion here, is that we're going to touch on some issues, probably be very interested in knowing everything, but we're going to stop before we get there because it's just a vast topic, right? The Ayin Hara is, however big of a topic you think Ayin Hara is, the concept of Yetzer Hara is even bigger, right? So when it comes to Yetzer Hara, we're going to have to ask a few local questions as to what do they mean here when they say Yetzer Hara. And then there's broader questions. How do you understand the Yetzer Hara to begin with? What does it mean, Yetzer Hara? Is it a psychological concept? Is it an internal battle that we have? Is it some sort of external demon that we're trying to fight? Is it some sort of external demon that becomes part of us that we have to fight? This is a huge topic. And we're not going to cover all of that today. We're going to see a little bit, I think, of a taste of that. I'm thinking of saving that topic for Shavuos. Because we'll see, we're not going to see it now, but there's how it relates to, you're going to have to, you got to wait that long. Because we'll see it relates to, I got to save some stuff, I can't just give everything away, you know. It relates to a madrash, yes, exactly, it's a teaser. It relates to a madrash between Rus and Boaz. But again, it's a vast topic. For now, what we want to keep in mind is not to get brainwashed by just the fact that he uses this word Yetzer Hara. Doesn't mean that it's our understanding of Yetzer Hara and input it into what he's saying. Well, there's a book that I'm going through. It's an academic book, and he, one of his arguments is that the concept of Yetzer Hara gets elaborated on throughout the course of Chazal. So there's early concepts of Yetzer Hara, and then it sort of develops as from the Tanaim to the Amoraim, and etc. keep going, and it takes a sort of a different twist in different eras. Maybe that's what we'll talk about on Shavuos. For now, let's just dive into the immediate context of our Mishnah. So look at source number 8, the Magen Avos of the Rashbats, with Shimon ben Semach Duran, 14th, 15th century Spain, and then to Algiers. So he says as follows, the Yetzer Hara, and I think this commentary is going to bring out this point as to how we can differently conceptualize what Yetzer Hara is depending on our context. Yetzer Hara who? Riboy Ataivos, so similar to what the Rambam said, in a lot of desires, too many desires. Michael comes to eating, mister drinking, tashmish sexual activities. Shekolam amalatavaso kasher yasasoso yetzara yamos mehera. And he says, so what does it mean that you're going to die? Right? It's motzias adam in olam. Says that these things can actually kill you. Right? Drinking kills you. Overeating can kill you. Right? Tashmish can kill you as well. Right? There's diseases that go along with that. So you can literally understand that these things, these taivos, can actually limit your life. So now, in the next few sentences, next few paragraphs, what he's going to do, he's going to bring us a bunch of different quotes from Chazal about the Yetzer Hara. So in the middle of the second line, Kvar Amru Chacham in Perek HaRoah, quotes Mishnah Brachos, Perek Osin Pasin, Erevin, Kishnei Yitzram Yeshbo, the Adam, there's two Yetzers, there's two... I don't know how you want to define Yetzers, inclinations perhaps. Echad tov, echad ra. So one of the things that this book that I'm reading about, it's called Demonic Desires, this Yetzer Hara book, the academic book, argues that this concept of two Yetzers is actually not agreed upon by everybody. And that you have other Ma'amari Chazal, you have other statements of Chazal that think that there's only one Yetzer, and then you have to understand then all the sources based on that. So just for now, just keep in mind that this might not, you can find other sources that argue that there's not just two Yetzers, it's not this two opposing forces, it's actually just one force. But again, so he's quoting here the concepts of two forces, hara nitenbo mishash nolad, the bad is internalized when you are born, batov nitenbo mishash shechad mitzvot, but the good isn't internalized till you are bar mitzvot or bat mitzvot. Again, you have to understand that. We're not going to elaborate on that now. When you're a kid, you don't have a good, you have a Yetzer Tov. You can't do good things. What does that mean? Melech Zaken Ksiel V'Yetzer Tov Yelad Miskain V'Chacham Kemo Shehamru V'Medrash. So there's different metaphors for the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is a trickster. The Yetzer Tov is a child. Ukfar Rachnu B'Zeh, skipping a little bit, B'Zeh B'Chelek Shlishi Mizeh Sefer. He says, I elaborated on this in other places, etc., etc., etc. So he basically says that what does it mean, Yetzer Hara? It means our classic idea of what Yetzer Hara is. Things that create taibos within us, desires within us. But notice, in the second to last line before the next bullet point, where I italicized and bolded it, where it says, the beginning of the line says, Lamed Beis, and then Va'avos Rebbe Nasan. Okay, so Va'avos Rebbe Nasan, this is the commentary of Chazal, so this is sages of the Talmud commenting on the Mishnah. So this is a very early commentary on the Mishnah in Perkei Avos. It says as follows, in Avos Rebbe Nasan, Pershuhu B'inyan Acher. They explain the Yetzer Hara in a totally different way. V'chein Shanu Sham, this is what it says there. Yetzer Hara, Niten Ba'adam B'shashen Olad. The Yetzer Hara is put into us when we are born. Ha-behemaim, this is what it means. Ha-behemaim ola lagag, hi solelas acharau. Avala tinok, ratzli pol mimenu. And so you put an animal by a roof. So what's the animal going to do? Gets to the end of the roof, it's going to back up. Put a kid on a roof, what's the kid going to do? Jump off. Right? V'chein l'medura u'l'gechalim. Right? So an animal sees a fire, what does it do? Backs away. What does a kid do? Ooh, let me touch that. Komsan b'yadam v'neshi yitzara nizrakbo. The Yetzer Hara, according to Avos Rebbe Nasan, is what?
Curiosity.
Interesting you both said that. Perhaps curiosity, that's an interesting way of putting it. I was thinking about it's more of this, you know, Freud's type of thanatos, meaning that we all have this drive to die, to kill ourselves. Now, again, that's a controversial subject as to what it means. But again, The examples given are these sort of like we are putting ourselves in harm's way. So my goal is not to analyze that right now or maybe ever. I don't know. We'll have to look into that into more detail, okay, maybe on Shavuos. But the point for now that I want to make is that at the very least, what do you see about the concept of Yetzer Hara?
It's dangerous.
Yes, but it could be interpreted in a number of ways. That's my point. So when we say Yetzer Hara, our mind probably goes, okay, Yetzer Hara, it's creating this taiva within me, like the Rambam, like the Rashbats says in the beginning. It's creating some sort of desire for me to do something wrong, to do something, you know, in terms of my base desires, these physical desires. And now, Avos Rebbe Nasan, that's not what we're talking about. So, maybe it's worse, right? But the point here is that there's numerous ways we can understand this. And that's where we're going to leave that for now. We're going to finish off the shiur with Sinas Habrios. Okay, so we did Ayin Hara. We did
Hara. Thank you.
We did Ayin Hara. We did Yetzer Hara. And now Sinas Habrios. One of the things that that this book, Demonic Desires, argues is that the Torah, that Chazal's opinion of Yetzer Hara is not, at least in the Gemara and the Mishnah, is not this concept of this animalistic instinct versus sort of a rationalistic instinct. This sort of like this Greek dichotomy that we have, that it's our base desires versus our, you know, rational self. He says that if you look in the Midrash, if you look in Chazal, you look in the sources, you don't find that. This whole concept of Taiva, he says, is a later addition. So the fact that the Rambam and the Rashbat say it here, perhaps he would argue that wouldn't be completely accurate as towards what the Mishnah is going to say. Again, I'll leave that for later. So now, Sinas Habrios. What does it mean, Sinas Habrios? So I want to make 2 points here. So keep going in the Magen Avros of the Rashbat. So source number 8, still the second bullet point now. Sinas Habrios. We're not changing anything. It's exactly where we are. Right after where we left off. Sinas Habrios, Perush Rabbeinu Moshe. First he quotes the Rambam. We saw this Rambam. What did the Rambam say about Sinas Habrios? Anybody remember what does it mean to not like people, to hate people? The Rambam understood that as melancholy. to be depressed, right? So, Sinas Abrith Perish Rabbein and Moshe, Zecholi Hu Machmas Mar Shchora HaGoveras Alav, it's some sort of melancholy. Benikra Zecholi, melancholy, melancholy. It's a sickness that causes people to hate other people. And to isolate, go to dangerous places. Visham, and he spells out what the danger with that is. Visham yochlu arayos v'zeibim. You'll get eaten by some sort of wild animal. Vim Cain, but here's his critique of the Rambam. Vim Cain zemi darchei harefuahu v'ein biyada adam linatzel me'achalaim. It's a fascinating statement. He says, if that's true, then what are we? We're talking about a mental illness. We're talking about a sickness. And, he argues, it's not within your capacity to be healed from that. Right? So again, I don't want us to think, I know I said I'm not going to say it again, but I'm going to say it again, that this is exactly what, when we say depression, is what we're talking about. But at least for the Mishnah, what he's saying here is that the Mishnah is telling you things you should stay away from. If it's this depression, apparently, he says, this melancholy, whatever, you can't control that. It's an illness that you have no control over, and by perforce, that cannot be what the Mishnah is talking about.
That's only one place
thing. What?
Maybe when it's only one place, you can't control it.
Right, so... When it gets too far, it gets hard. Okay, but the Ein Zeh Derech HaMishnah, that's not what the Mishnah is doing. The Mishnah doesn't tell us things like, okay, don't, you know, get diseases. He's saying you can't really control that. If that's the case, if we're going to disagree with the Rambam, so what does it mean, Sinas Abrios? So he quotes Rashi, Rabbeinu Shlomo, Sinas Abrios, Sinas Chinam, baseless hatred, or, you know, famous topic. Vizui min HaTorah, that's a concept from the Torah, Lo Sistas Achicha Bubadecha, don't hate your brother in your heart, and it says, V'afla Recha Kamocha, Zekla Godam HaTorah, etc. So we have so far, the Rambam says it's this melancholy, we have Rashi says, Sinas Chinam, and third bullet point here, the Yesh Mefarshim, third explanation, Sinas Abrios, Mishu Kasha, who maybe I love Sinas Abrios. What does it mean? You're just a difficult person. Difficult to get along with. And maybe I love Sinas Abrios, what does it mean? You cause people to hate you. Right? So Sinas Abrios doesn't necessarily mean hating other people. It means you're so difficult that people don't want to be with you. Right? That's how this third explanation says Sinas Abrios says. Hakol Mekalon also, everybody curses you. And so why is it dangerous?
Because
they curse you, and then the curse is going to come true, and you're going to die. Right? So either Sinas Abrios means you don't like people, so you isolate yourself, and there's danger in the isolation. Or it's that Sinas Abrios means other people hate you because you're so difficult to get along with, and they'll curse you, and that's how it's going to affect you. Okay, and then you can read further on that. We're going to close with Rav Kook. Okay, so skip page 3. There's some interesting stuff there. You can read it on your own, especially source number 10 is in English. Talks about the Maharal, how he just talks about how the concept of evil eye, evil inclination, and evil heart, Sinas Abrios, are all rooted in the Torah. They're all psukim that these things are ra, and that's why they are motzi min ha'olam. The Maharal understood in terms of good and evil that good is what holds the world up, ra is what takes the world away, and since these things in the Torah are called ra, that's why these things are motzi nesadam min ha'olam. Source number 11, also just briefly, Tiferes Yisrael connects these three things. And I leave this for homework for you guys to do. These three things of Ayin Hara, Yetzer Hara, and Sinas Abrios to Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim, which are three pillars that we spoke about months ago in the beginning of Perek Aleph. So you can think about how does Ayin Hara, Sinas Abrios deal with Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. That's for homework. Now, last page. We're going to close with Rav Kook. This is a photocopy, again, from that book that I showed you last week. That I bought from Eichler's, from the gift card. Thank you again. So here's what Rav Kook has to say about Sinas Abrios. If you look here, I boxed it off on the right-hand column towards the bottom. It's a semi-box. the part of the box didn't get photocopied. You see what I'm talking about? Bottom right-hand column. The paragraph starts, Umargala b'pume kalpe ha-rotnim v'ha-mekatrigim shayu tonim alav shu rach midei kalpe ha-poshava v'aryanim. So we know Rav Kook was very open. He was very accepting of chilonim, people who weren't religious, people who were anti-religious. Rav Kook was very, he loved everybody. So that, and this is similar to what Professor Shapiro spoke about yesterday, last night, but you know, that creates a lot of tension. Not everybody wants you to be open to people who are not following in the ways of Torah. So they yelled at him, how can you do this? Cook, you have to be more zealot. You have to be a zealot. Hayameshiv Omer, this is what Cook used to say. Hare im chas v'shalom esna es misha asura lisno so. Let's say I chas v'shalom, God forbid, I hate somebody who I'm not actually supposed to hate. Al zeh lo uchali pater b'yom adim b'shum taina. I can't get around that. God's going to come to me. Why'd you hate that person? You shouldn't have hated them. And no answer. Ah, im ohav es misha tzarech lisno so. If I love somebody who, you're right, maybe I should hate this person. But if I love him, by accident, by mistake. Amayan shenu. What? How's God going to punish me? Shehafti, v'nichshalti ba'avas chinam. That I sinned by loving somebody freely. Medin kezeu chali pater. From that I'll get around. I'm not worried about that. L'chach mutav shekashal ba'avas chinam. It's better that I make a mistake loving somebody by, freely. V'lo b'sinas chinam. Not by hating somebody freely. Very fascinating. One or two more points on the left-hand side. First, the second point. Though we'll see if we have a time for the first point. But the second half of the page on the left-hand column, Sinas Abrios. So this is from Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. This is Rav Cook's son, where he says similar concept. Sinas Abrios says Yesh Tovsim Pasuk Mitilam. There are those that quote the pasuk from Tehillim. Halom Misan Echa Hashem Esna. So Hashem hates those who hate you. V'yeshnan darchei chinuch hamadkishot zot ba'ofen miuchad. And there are those who train their children, train themselves. This is like it's a mitzvah. Kisod b'chinuch, to hate people. Ma'amidim es midas sinas abrios. They instill kisod musad b'tayna shekach heim maginim alas. That's how I protect myself. I have to hate those who hate me. So he says, if you want to hate somebody, that hate has to come from holiness and love. You have to have a capacity to love, and you have a capacity of kedusha. Only if you can prepare yourself and be somebody who's humble. It's actually similar to something we said about last week about giving tochacha. So you have to be the Hasidic point of the bittul ha-anochi. You have to sort of humble yourself that you're like a nobody. It's only at that point where you're like David, you could say you're like a worm. Then you have a shot at saying I can hate somebody. Im lo mitoch dargazu, if you're not on that level, I raise a stam gilui shel shchitos midos ra'os. It's just bad midos. It's bad character. But you're cloaking it in piety. Korim lezek kanos, I call that zealotry. Uve'etzem yesh kan kishron shel sina. Cheshek lesno shaya eno tchona yudis. This is not a Jewish character trait. If you're going to hate, you got to do it the right way. And believe me, we can't do it the right way, so don't hate. And that brings us back to Avas Chinam. There's one last story here. We'll just close with this. Right on top of that, so Rav Kook used to quote from this Rabbi Menashe Me'ilya Zatzal. And this is this in terms of the concept of Sinas HaBrios. So what does Brios mean? What does the word Brios mean?
Creation.
Creatures, creations. So we've been interpreting it so far in terms of people. But you can expand that. It can mean any creation, any creature. We're going to actually see that a little bit later on when we talk about brios in a different context. So he says here, so this, he quotes his Rebbe, the Gaon Rebbe Menashe in Ilya, Shaya Rabba Shel Smargon, is that how you pronounce it? I'm not sure. Shaya Ragil Lomar, this is what he used to say, Kol Od, as long as Yeshna Tolas Achas, Tachas Eben Achas, as long as there's one word under one stone, Isham Bekseh Olam, anywhere in the world, who's in pain, who's crying out, I can never think that I could be calm. I can say that there's good in the world. If there's one word in one place, in one random section of the world that's in pain, I can never say that I'm comfortable. That was the amount of love that this tzaddik had, that he cared so much about every creature, every creation. Very powerful statement. I think it's a good place to leave off. We'll continue next week.
Who is this?
I don't know who this is. Rav Menashe Mil, it says Rav Kook. Ragalei Sapper Marat. So Rav Kook used to quote him. Ziknei Ir Smargon. Kishel Amit Sham Bebechirasa. So Rav Kook used to learn with him. Learned in that town when he was younger. I don't know, do the research. I'm sure it's in his biography. I'm not sure. So with that, we'll close. Next week, we are on regular schedule, and we'll pick up with the next Mishnah Yud Beis. Okay. Thank you.